Hello and welcome to I'll Try That, the beer review and news podcast.
I'll Try That, the beer review and news podcast.
Here in London.
Ding dong.
I was thinking about this last night in bed.
Smashed it.
Brew for success.
As a soon to be fur daddy.
Another one in the bag.
I'm vetoing that.
This week, in the pursuit of hoppiness, let's go to the land of tulips and clogs and visit Amsterdam and the Heineken Brewery. But first, the hop topic.
So this week, we're doing a very UK-centric hop topic because Wetherspoons, one of the largest publican chains, I would say, across the UK, has outwardly said, parents, you're on a two-drink limit.
Now, we need a bit more, I feel. So the two-drink limit is when they have kids in the pub, right? So it's the idea that when their kids are running around, you only can have two pints.
So they specifically said, don't use our pubs as a creche. The idea being is that if you're in a Wetherspoons and you're bringing your family in, that's absolutely fine. It's a family-friendly environment. That's what they create. But don't sit there for hours on end with your kids literally running around, screaming, shouting, disrupting the environment for other people. And the funny thing about this is why they can do this to drink like maximum for parents in their pubs is because it comes from a 1902 Licensing Act.
So it's been around a while.
Which is a crime for anybody in charge of a child under the age of 7 to be drunk in a public place.
See, I think this is a good rule.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with this, actually.
I think parents should be caring of their, responsible for their children. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that statement. For I mean, you definitely shouldn't be drunk dealing with children.
If you've gone into a pub and you're getting absolutely sloshed and your kids are running riot and you're too drunk to look after them, it means that the people who are in charge of the pub end up having to look after your kids, which is not their job. And so I completely respect the idea they're saying, do you know what? We have a right to not serve you any more alcohol so that you can look after your child or your children.
I think this rule should be brought across to any restaurant, any venue, or it is a rule. It is a law, but I think it should be enforced more, and Wetherspoons shouldn't just be carrying the torch with this. I think it should be enforced anywhere and everywhere.
Do you think they've been demonised by this a little bit?
Wetherspoons?
Do you think this is like...
Look, I think as any laws go, it's very broad.
Yeah.
And I think there are going to be a lot of people who are caught up in this who may not be the main people why this is being enforced. They are very quick to assert that families are welcome at Wetherspoons. Mm. This is not a no kids allowed environment. It's very much families are allowed.
Yeah.
It's just for those few parents who are not using or respecting, I suppose, the environment they're in with their kids. And let's face it, does not apply to the majority of people. I don't think you're going to be having, you know, your second Cinzano and Wetherspoons are like, right, you're on the clock, get out of here
yeah.
in a second. And I know I use Cinzano and it like is a very hoity-toity kind of drink.
It's almost like they're making it clear because I think with Wetherspoons and the attitude that Wetherspoons gets with the local populace is it's the cheap place to get booze. It's the easily accessible pubs that you can get. Well, for instance, I remember you can get in Worcestershire, you can get a £1.95 Ruddles Best. Okay. And you could get a whole pint for £1.95. As in, I'm not saying that's like the worst thing in the world, but as in, they are almost battling against, I think, what they can get, which is a lot of clientele that may be there for the cheap alcohol.
If you guys don't mind, pursuit of hoppy this time.
Okay, this week we're going to be talking about Heineken. Now, Heineken is a household name, as everyone I'm sure is very aware of. Very aware of probably its Dutch origins coming from the land of Holland. And its oldest brewery is in Amsterdam.
So it all started in 1864 when Adrian Heineken bought the brewery De Heuberg, known as the Haystack in Amsterdam. And actually there is still a Heineken on the board. Her name is Charlene Lucille de Carvalho Heineken, who is a lawyer architect. And from 1988, she is still on the board. So Heineken, the family, are still part of the company.
So talking about their oldest brewery, Rich and I have actually been to and experienced the Heineken experience in their oldest brewery, which is still that one. It went out of commission in like 1988, I think, when they stopped, they closed down the brewing itself, and they turned it into this is what Heineken is. If you're looking for an encapsulation of what Heineken want to put out there as their brand, go and experience the Heineken experience in Amsterdam.
It was one of my favourite things we did when we went to Amsterdam. And we visited some interesting museums when we were there. But this was definitely a highlight the whole way around.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it took you through the whole of their brewing process. It took you through their horses. I know we've talked horses and beer go hand in hand with process of delivering beer. But Heineken have their own horses. And so you went through the stables and there were horses there.
We got to meet them, didn't we?
Meet the horses. They're very polite.
I petted one.
You know, and they, you know, that delivered the beer, you know, not the original horses that delivered the beer back in the day, of course, but, you know, big horses.
There was a 3D virtual room experience, wasn't there, as well, where you went through the brewing process of the modern brewing process of a bottle of Heineken beer.
That's it. And they, you know, they you should see the stills, the pots. Maybe this is distilling, but it went through the fermentation process, and it's not where they make the beer anymore. It was just purely for show, but it still had the same bits. But the main thing is, obviously, you went into, you know, a showcase of all their sports sponsorships.
Well, talking about sports sponsorship, obviously at the moment they are sponsoring the Champions League, UEFA Champions League, F1 and Formula E, which is the electronic formula racing,
which I have seen in Red Hook, Brooklyn, and it was fascinating to see this because I've never been to Formula One, but I followed Formula One, obviously, you know, we all as kids, and you recognize that noise, yeah, that the cars make, and to see these cars that look like Formula One cars that are going the same speed as Formula One cars but make this just high-pitched weeing noise, like wee noise.
What noise, Joe?
It was a high-pitched whirring noise. that was very, very off-putting, I suppose. It was great to see, and more and more Formula E, actively encouraged to see it because it's great, and they're doing it in these really high-profile locations like New York.
So with that sponsorship, they actually have done quite a few advertisements, and they get big names in. So they use the toilet roll challenge, which has been going around since the debacle of people buying out the toilet roll when the COVID virus started. And they got Thierry Henry on there doing the toilet roll challenge and then like kicking it to people who didn't know.
Toilet roll challenge is them doing keepy uppies, yeah, with a toilet roll, yeah, right?
And then with the F1 advert, they actually got David Coulthard, who's a legendary driver, and basically he was being this amazing guest at a party, and he was doing everything right, getting everyone's names right, being able to speak in multiple languages. And what was actually happening is he had an earpiece with an F1 team behind the scenes. And so it was actually like a really cool, quirky, amazing ideas. And it just kind of encapsulated. And then their big thing at the end was the fact that it's a great performance, but it's a team effort. That's Heineken as their tagline.
Fun fact about David Coulthard, just sort of on a side tangent, because I've recently found out, he actually lives in Monaco and is a permanent resident of Monaco in France. Just thought you guys might like to know that.
Sorry, Joe, was that a fun fact?
I never said it was a fun fact.
Matt, you definitely said fun fact.
I think that Heineken is very proud of its campaigns that it's been doing and thinking about sponsorship and its advertising. And I've actually noticed that they've done a lot of Heineken 0.0 adverts, which are their non-alcoholic advertisement, and they've linked it with F1. So the, I'm going to say, Rosbergs, who are a big racing family, have done an advert where they're racing and they're competing with each other in this advert, and the brother, and they drive this amazing car, obviously linked with Heineken, all the time. And at the end, the dad goes to get the car keys off his son, because it looks like his son's drinking, and then his son turns the beer and he's like, no, it's non-alcoholic. So it's really, like, again, really good advert.
Well, I think, I mean, the one thing that sticks to my mind about talking about their non-alc, their 0.0, again, this is something that's come out in the last couple of years, this non-alc trend that we're seeing, and, you know, Heineken have brought their version out, and it is just like drinking the lager, but a non-alcoholic version, which actually is, you think, is very simple to do. It's really difficult to make a non-alcoholic beer taste good. But the one, like, 0.0 ad that really sticks in my mind is a guy who's looks like it's in America, because there's like a sheriff, like a patrol sheriff, yeah, you know, like with a cap, you know, you can picture him already in your mind with a badge, gun on his waist, obviously. And he's writing a ticket for a guy who sat in a parked car because he's there just drinking a beer, a Heineken. And the guy in the car smugly turns around and like shows him that it's 0%. And the sheriff looks up and points to there's a no parking zone.
I do remember that advert. It's really good. Yeah, so talking, we've gone a bit on about the advertising there and stuff, but if we could just kind of move on to the actual the design of their can and all of that sort of stuff, which is quite cool. So you've got the Red Star, which is quite prominent, I would say, on all of their cans. If you're drinking a Heineken right now, take a look. Any of you guys know where the Red Star originated from?
Russia.
It does feel quite communism, you know, but there has to be greater meaning for why a Dutch beer company is putting a red star on their cans and bottles, because I know it's on the cap of the bottle as well, on the very top.
So if we go back to, all the way back to medieval times, the red star would be where you would buy alcohol from.
So you,
there'd be a shop with a red star. Let me just fact check that for you. But back in medieval times, the star was the sign for the brewer's symbol.
Okay.
Okay, that's awesome.
The specific brewer, or just beer in general?
Just beer in general. It'd be a brewer's symbol.
Like, you knew where you went to go and get beer, no matter who sold
it. It's a bit like the barber's thing, you know, the red and white stripes.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what that's the signposting.
Yeah. But then Heineken also took, they kind of expanded on the star as well for themselves. So not only that it's the sign of a brewery back in medieval times, but it's also the 5 points for the ingredients that they use. Each point represents a different ingredient, which is...
Oh, another brewer talking about five ingredients.
Five ingredients.
What a shocker.
Yeah, was it malted barley, water, hops, and Heineken's unique A yeast?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, they're not talking about rice in this one, I suppose. But I think that's, I mean, again, point of differentiation for brewers is usually down to what hops they're using, where the water's coming from, and the yeast. Well, yeast is a big, big deal in the brewing world, right?
Well, Heineken claimed to have a special A yeast, which is responsible for the beer's rich flavour and taste.
They don't do B standards. It's
no, so it was a yeast. Pure strain of yeast was cultivated in a lab in 1886 by a student, Louis Pasteur.
That was beautiful.
And it's still solely used by Heineken today. So no one else uses this yeast. Heineken doesn't just use a special yeast. They also use a different kind of tank. Well, not a different kind of tank, but a different... So most industry standard is vertical. But they brew in horizontal tanks, which is supposedly helps with the fresh, fruity aroma and mild, bitter taste.
This ongoing theme of Heineken policing the things that they do and how they make their things. I mean, there's a really interesting area about this, about the Dutch pour. Have you guys heard about this before?
No.
So this is an outline that Heineken have put out there to say, if you are drinking a Heineken and you have to do a Dutch pour. So a Dutch pour is that you've got the glass, I'm reading this up, a specific 33 centiliter glass. So much smaller than our pint glasses here and smaller than what the US would drink.
Yeah.
You'll notice them whenever you go to Holland or the Netherlands. It's a very specific glass. And you basically just turn the tap full on until it goes all the way up, pull it off, where you get this Dutch head on the top. They call it a Dutch head. And
so essentially that's a substantial...
A Dutch style head. And it's just the foam that's gone and it's overflowing the top. And then what they'll do is they'll use a strimmer.
Like a blade.
Then they'll on the top, what they'll do is they'll use a skimmer. At a 45 degree angle, they've been very specific that this skimmer has to be at a 45 angle to remove any dry or broken foam from the top.
Oh, okay.
And you'll see this in a lot of their adverts where they've done it. You've seen them pour it and then they'll just basically chop the top off the foam. So our logo wouldn't look like this if it was on Heineken standards.
Yeah. I've got an interesting fact for Heineken, the global company.
Is it interesting though?
Well, you'll find out, won't you?
Well, you just caveat it's just I've got a fact about Heineken.
Okay, fine.
We'll be the judges if it's interesting or not.
Okay. I've got a fact.
I'm assuming it's not going to be interesting.
I have a fact about Heineken. You will tell me if it's interesting or not. 25 million Heinekens are served each day across 192 countries.
That is an obscene amount of alcohol being sold.
25 million.
I thought the 192 countries was way more impressive, but yeah. The fact that it's spread so far.
Well, I think the fact that Heineken is another macro brewery sold around the world doesn't come as any big surprise to anyone. Like, we all know Heineken. You know, they've got a massive presence in a lot of countries. But the fact that... What was that volume? That sat about volume again?
So, Heineken claims it's 25 million Heinekens.
A day?
A day.
A day.
It's crazy.
Like, I like Heineken, but I didn't think it was that popular.
Actually, what would that look like? How much... Like, would that...
How to visualize
how
that?
Would you visualize?
I can't visualize
is that,
it.
Is that like a school hall? Like, that is incredible.
Oh, no. That's way more than a school hall. But I think while we're talking about Heineken itself and how much they sell the product, let's talk about the product. So, it is obviously a lager as well, but I always like a Heineken. I wouldn't say I'd pick a Heineken up. There's so many other beers that I would pick over a Heineken, but I actually would massively prefer a lager by Heineken than most of the lagers. It's one of my go-to lagers. If I'm in a bar, restaurant, whatever it might be, or on the shop shelf, and I'm seeing a lager option, and it's a Heineken, I will more times than not pick up a Heineken.
When I drink a Heineken, I actually think good product and smooth drink. Solid, smooth drink.
I like a Heineken, but I wouldn't go out and buy it for myself. I've just never been a massive fan of it. And it's not something I would go and pick off the shelves and stuff like that. I think there are other lagers that I do prefer more. But it is nice, and it's got a nice smooth taste to it.
It's one of the bigger lagers that everyone knows about, and I think it is one of the bigger lagers that I would pick first. So if you look at the macro breweries, Heineken is one I would be drawn to. And to be fair, I actually have always been drawn to the bottled green style. For me, that is something that has always drawn it to me, is like the green, cool style that it has.
So I think you've just nailed it there. Like, green is synonymous with Heineken in my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, everything that they do is... And green, which is quite bold in the beer category to own green, because green is just synonymous with beer in general, the green bottles that traditionally comes with. But Heineken have gone one step further and made green their color. And it's this very specific type of... It's called the Heineken green, you know, that you'll find. So everything from their bottles, you know, and now they're more modern bottles that you might have seen. They've got now an emboss on it. So like the seal comes out of the bottle itself, so it's not all smooth. You've got the top bit the neck of the bottle, and it kind of comes out. So actually, yes. So if you look down their bottle, you know, very green is the Heineken green in the bottle shape, and then you go down the neck, and they've got the embossed logo, and it's actually this red star that you were talking about earlier on, Rich, straddled by established 1873. So again, it's just they're owning this green within an already green dominated beer category.
Yeah.
And I think that's just power to them. That's fantastic that they've done that.
We're going to now look at the UK side of it and the UK company, which started around 2008 when Heineken bought and acquired a company called Scottish and Newcastle. This company have something called Star Pubs and Bars. And they have 2,500 pubs across the country, and they want to promote and continue the ideology of that pubs are a massive part of British culture, and they are the hub of a community. And they've been investing, and in 2019, they invested 50 million into this Star Pubs and Bars.
£50 million.
Yeah.
Right.
And that means that over the last 5 years, from 2019 onwards, so that's from 2014, they've put 190 million into these pubs and bars where you can be a landlord for them and you can run a pub for them.
Just so I'm clear, so 190 million pounds, which is what, like $230 million at the current exchange rate. And so they've been putting that behind to enable people to become publicans.
Yes.
Right.
And for instance, this has meant that they have created 1,200 jobs.
Wow, okay.
Which is good.
But these aren't just in general jobs working in the publican industry. They're just setting up people to be publicans, which is like they run basically running their own little mini businesses.
Exactly. And they're making for instance, recently they've added an extra 4 million in rent reductions. £4 million in rent reductions for all these people due to the COVID virus.
Right, so they're trying to help their people out a lot.
Which meant the support since, which is from September and October, they have actually supported £25 million for rent support in the last year as well. So before even the COVID virus happened, they've actually been supporting the rent of the people who are trying to become tenants by £25 million. It's amazing.
Well, I think as well, if that's just giving you a snapshot of what they're doing in one country, you said they're in 160 plus countries in the world. That's that ripple effect. You know, if that's what they're doing for one country, albeit it's the UK, so I imagine it's an important market for them.
Yeah.
But they're doing this across all these other different countries as well, or a version of which. I like to hear these stories of these big brewers and these big companies actually taking an interest in what's happening on the ground in these different local markets and helping the real person out.
You hear so much negativity about big business and stuff like that, but they do a lot of good stuff. There is a lot of good stuff out there. You just have to do a bit of research into it and do a bit of finding out, which is it is heartwarming to hear.
So for instance, another thing that they've done in the UK in 2009, they visited an addiction centre, and because of this they actually stopped listing Strongray Black and White Lightning, which is they owned because of the alcoholic content of it and how dangerous it was, because it was so cheap. It was such a cheap alcohol that people who were addictive were using it, and they've stopped listing it as one of their
I must say, I'm pleased to hear that, because I've just, you know, Strongray Black or
White Lightning.
White Lightning itself are just such
dangerous.
Well, for the price point, it's that classic low alcohol, like high alcohol for low price.
I've just looked into Strongbow Black, because I've never actually heard of it myself, and it was 7.5%.
Wow,
strong dry cider.
How strong is White Lightning?
But I think looking at this, a company like Heineken has listened to how they're being part of the problem, and they've acted on it. So it makes companies like Carlsberg, who own Superbrew, which is the one in the UK that is synonymous with, you know, drinking issues, and problems and drink responsibility problems because it is, it's just, it's got that reputation. It's high ABV for a very low price for what it is. And you think Carlsberg, if there are already companies like Heineken that are making that mark and doing this kind of move, how can they justify having these products still on the shelf?
Yeah.
Sorry, just to backtrack quickly, I just pulled up White Lightning and what their percentage. It's 12%.
Wow.
It's a 12% cider. Oh. And
I just remember drinking it and it reminded me of vodka, like as in the strength of it is like like drinking vodka.
I don't know what. I mean, I've heard of like, you know, and I've tried specialism ales that are 10%, for example.
Yeah.
And it is like drinking treacle. So I can't imagine what a 12% cider based, apple based. It's just pure sugar.
It just tasted like.
Or white spirit.
Yeah, it tasted it like was, what it was.
But
mad.
That's the issue when it comes to a cider. I know we're talking about Heineken, the lager this episode, but it's good to talk about this point because it's a very drinkable, high alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
Sorry, not even beer, cider. Thank you. And I think that's where you're masking the very high alcoholic content with something that tastes palatable.
Yeah.
And on top of that as well, their marketing was that across the top of there was a red band. So he had the original White Lightning logo, which is like a spear with lightning going into it. Then across the top, it said extra 50% free on top of it.
So it was all about the price point.
Yeah, and it was all about low. The price point.
So they knew who their target market were. Well, yeah.
But the thing about it, like, the fact that Heineken have gone, actually, this is a problem. We're not helping people here and we need to be responsible. And I think that's why if you look back at what we talked about, a lot of their advertising and campaigns are actually about drinking responsibly.
Well, it's a breath of fresh air, I would say, to see the 0.0, see them pushing out non-alc in this way, lower ABV. I mean, what alcohol content in a normal Heineken can is 5%.
It's an average.
Which is average. I think this isn't a Bud Light 4.2% Budweiser's 4.5%, but this is still a lower on the ABV version than, you know, some of these craft like IPAs that we're seeing at like 6 plus ABV. And for those people, because it was pointed out to me recently, some of these comments from the on the podcast, people don't really know what ABV is.
I didn't know what ABV was. I had no idea until somebody talked. All I was like, what's the percentage? What's the percentage?
So ABV is alcohol by volume.
That's interesting because it's never explained.
Yeah.
You just see the percent. I've always just looked at percentage and not even, I thought all 5% like that.
Well, it's the universal measuring of alcohol. It's in beer. It's also in fermented drinks that have alcohol content. Yeah. It's in spirits and liquor as well. Has this. So, you know, 100% proof you might hear in the US, that's 100% alcohol, 100% ABV. And then you go down. So like a wine, for example, is like 12%. On most wines, a 12% ABV.
Yeah, 11 to 12 average.
That's it. Beers are usually anywhere from 4 through to like 7%.
Yeah.
And then you've got your spirits that are somewhere from 20 plus. Talking about Heineken, looking at their social media, on Instagram, they've got 510,000 followers.
Wow.
And Twitter is 21k. Again, Twitter is just their UK one, whereas their Instagram is global. So as always, we'll put the links in the description for their website and Instagram and Twitter and Untappd as well. And we'll also put the 0.0 ad that I was referencing earlier on. You will have heard of Heineken. You will have tried Heineken. It's a great go-to lager and is one of the best out of the macro breweries, in my opinion. And that's all we have time for this week's episode of the I'll Try That podcast. And so from me, Joe,
Rich
and Simo,
goodbye. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram,
Twitter,
and watch us on YouTube.
Goodbye now. Always drink responsibly, and if you or anyone else needs some help, go to drinkaware.co.uk for more information.